On this episode of the Service Academy Business Mastermind, how to run a profitable conference with Michael Bradley, Naval Academy, Class of 2001.
Welcome to the Service Academy Business Mastermind. All you Academy grads, we got just what you need. Yo,
Service Academy Business Mastermind.
Take your business to the next level? Then what are you waiting for? Let's get started today. To learn more, visit www.sabmgroup.com.
In this episode, you'll learn how to turn your talent and passion into a sustainable business, how to host a conference and market your event to maximize attendance, how to attract top-tier attendees to your conference, and how to use meetups to generate new leads for your business. What's up, everybody? This is Scott Mackis, and today I'm excited to share this interview with Michael Bradley. Mike graduated from the Naval Academy in 2001 and is the founder of M3S Networking and the Navy Nuclear Power Officer Career Conference, the only career conference connecting nuke officers with the country's best companies and schools. Mike has attracted companies such as Apple and Blue Origin, which is Jeff Bezos' company, along with colleges such as the Wharton Business School, to his career conference. I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Service Academy Business Mastermind Podcast. Hey, Michael, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Scott. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
So, yeah, thanks so much for being on today and joining in on our podcast. Now, really excited to learn a little bit more about the business that you've started. And you actually started an event that a lot of us can relate to, and you started a career conference. And you know what I find really interesting about the career conference is, you know, when we're getting out of the military, a lot of us, probably a lot of the most of the people listening to this have been to a career conference, but probably or zero people have thought about actually creating one. And you actually created a career conference. And if you could just start off and just tell us what that journey's been like, and just tell us a little bit about the career conference that you started.
No, yeah, thanks for the good intro there. No, like yourself, a Naval Academy 2001 grad, and the way I was a submarine officer, and the way our pipeline works, you go through your schools, then you go to a sea tour, and then you do a shore tour at that approximately four to five year point of your career. And mine was in Washington D.C. And while I was there for basically three summers because of when I got there, and there was the Service Academy Career Conference. I don't know, Scott, if you'd ever been to one of those. The acronym SAC everyone uses. The DC one is the biggest. They have like 100 companies, and normally you get about 500 Service Academy grads that attend. And the cost is nominal. It's like $30. And I said, I'm just going to go. I don't know what I'm going to do when I grow up, so I'll just go to this thing. And it was great. It was really awesome. There was a lot of academy grads, classmates, and then it was a real friendly atmosphere for a group that had, at least my friends, we had no idea what we wanted to do. And there were business schools, and there was engineering schools, and there was, not just companies. And so I had a very positive experience with those. Just by nature, I'm kind of an event planner. I was the guy in high school that had the parties wedding gowns. I was the one that organized for the non-Navy folks. When you get promoted, you're supposed to have a party that is, what is it, Scott, your pay raise? You're supposed to spend as much money as your pay raise when you went from 01 to 02. So just lots of events over the years, and actually I'm a race director of a big 5K, 1,000 person 5K. So it just seemed kind of to fit within my wheelhouse of my strengths. And, probably like you, a lot of my friends in the Navy, the officers in my wardroom weren't Naval Academy grads. And mine in particular, it seems like none of my close friends in the pipeline or whatever, they were all OCS and RTC grads. So there was this event, military transition events or military career event that most of my friends couldn't attend because they weren't a Naval Academy grad. So there was like six of us. Another classmate, Tim Janigan, was involved, and some other guys you might know. But and we decided, let's, you know, I'll be the person that runs it. I'll be the one that makes kind of a, you know, a paycheck out of it. But if you guys would want to help, you could be on my board. And at that stage, everybody was kind of willing to give back and wanted to give back to the transitioning vets. And so we did our first one in 2014. And by no means anywhere the size of the Service Academy Your Career Conference, because it's just strictly nuke officers. But it went over really well. I think you could, you know, understand a lot of the companies really like the Navy nukes because of the engineering undergrad and then the project management skills you get in the nuclear pipeline. And at the end of the day, the companies thanked me and my board. The candidates were very, you know, complimentary, and they were very gracious, and there was a profit margin there. It wasn't like I was going to get rich doing it, but it checked all those boxes of, you know, it was something that I felt good about doing, and something I thought I did well. It's a pretty kick butt event. We really pull it off pretty well. Just a single day job fair and career fair, because we have the graduate schools there. And that led, that DC job fair led to another one out in Hawaii, and another one in Seattle. So just three single events a year. I mean, I'm not getting rich doing this, but it's a lot of fun, and it's probably the thing I spend the most professional time on. But not the only thing, but it's the thing that I think I can get my heart into the most. So, but
it's great. And there's probably some really good networking as well when you're finding companies and universities to attend the events, and also the candidates who attend the events. So I'm sure that piece is very valuable as well, not only to the attendees and the exhibitors, but to you as well. So I think there's probably
I have these, like, I mean, think of our classmates that went, you know, submarines, I have the 10 year later versions of them, like, thanking me and thinking that I was so influential in their careers. And really, I just sit there and play devil's advocate with these guys. I kind of take a headhunter type approach I'm really just an event planner, but since there's so few of these Navy nukes, when they come to me and say, you know, what should I do? And so I just start playing devil's advocate with them. And, the funniest, Scott, is when you're talking to the real kind of junior, the lieutenant that's finally kind of determined that they're going to get out of the Navy. They're still even attached maybe to a submarine or a carrier. And I ask them, if you do get out, what would you like to do? And they say, engineering or project management. I'm like, okay, yeah, you know, you're Navy nuke, engineering good, project management good. And I say, well, what about business school? They're like, I could go to business school. I'm like, yeah, Navy nukes crush it at business school. You know, they blow away the, GRE or GMAT, and then they get into the Whartons and the Harvards and whatever. And they're like, oh, okay. And I said, all right, so how about, what about consulting? And then they're like, well, what's consulting? I'm like, all right, so, you know, we just have to step back and, talk to you about all these different options. And, it's fun because these guys and gals don't realize how many options they have. And when you start talking to them and you see their start smiling and then they smile more and you're like, really, the world's your oyster, man. You know, you can do really whatever you want. And not that I always tell them that they need to, you know, go do the hardest thing or the most elite thing. Because sometimes, I mean, look at you and I. We're doing stuff that works with our families, you know. And sometimes that's what I tell them. You know, go you know, why don't you find a job, you know, that supports the style of life that you want to do. So, but the big thing for me is that I don't take any commissions for hires. So I feel like I can be pretty brutally honest with candidates. And I can see what they kind of want to do, and I'll try to steer them in that direction if I can. Or, I mean, like you said, the network that we have as Academy grads, or the network that you have in your community, that I'll find somebody. I'll say, hey, you know, friend of mine that works in tech, you know, there's this Navy nuke that wants to, you know, work in Northern California and, you know, for Google or Apple, can you talk to them? And normally they say yes. So, it's a real nice community, and I'm kind of glad to be back involved with it.
What's really interesting is that you've identified a strength in yourself and being an event planner. And it was kind of interesting how you talked about when the nuke officers are, you know, looking to get out of the Navy, and you're talking with them about next steps, and they kind of think about what they're currently doing. Oh, you know, I want to get into project management. You know, I want to get into middle management, you know, because that's what I do on the submarine, or on the ship that I'm currently on, or that I was on. And here you are, an event planner, right? And you found this talent in yourself that you've developed into a strength that you're bringing to the marketplace. You're adding real value. You're getting paid for it. And event planning has nothing to do with really being on submarines, except for when you're planning like the parties or whatever, like when you make it to the next rank. So I really think that's really interesting how you've kind of turned this strength of yours into a real business.
No, actually, and maybe you could, you know, tell people this. I no kidding, when I was getting out, I drew a Venn diagram, you know, the overlapping circles. And I had one circle, I said, what do I think I'm good at? The other circle was, what could I get my heart into? Like, what could I be kind of passionate about? And the other circle was, what can I make money doing? This was what I came up with in the middle of that, you know, the three circles. And really, when I decided that I didn't need to do something that would make me millions and millions of dollars, once you kind of, you know, thought, all right, this, you know, I mean, and I think you with your business, is a profitable business is a success, regardless if it's, you know, $1,000 or $100,000. I mean, you're putting yourself out there, you're taking risks, you know, and it all depends. I mean, maybe someone starts a business up on the side that makes $10,000 a year. Well, if that's in addition to what the household's already doing, well, that's a big success, you know, because that was $10,000 you didn't have. It's fun. And yeah, I think this could be something that your listeners could take away. Just because, I mean, would you say you do sales? Is that how you would describe yourself?
Yeah. So, I mean, so the purpose of kind of this mastermind community that I've created with the Service Academy graduates who are building businesses actually comes from one of my strengths. You know, when I took the StrengthsFinder assessment, my number two strength is includer. And includers like to stretch the circle wider and kind of bring people in and connect them and create value that way. So so that's just a way that I've used that strength, or I am using that strength, you know, to create value and bring value to people and to connect people. And, you know, and I thought it was also interesting that you said, so even if you start a business, you know, and it's in your spare time, and, you know, let's say you only make $10,000 a year doing it, you can learn a lot of new skills going through that process. Yeah. That you can apply to the job that you're in, that you can apply to other businesses that you might want to start. So what have been some of the key skills that you've learned kind of building out this career conference?
Well, I mean, good segue, Scott. I mentioned before that I'm the race director for a 5K, and really doing this nonprofit running club 5K, it's a Thanksgiving morning turkey trot. That's where I kind of sharpened some of these skills. And it was right kind of the beginning of Google advertising where you can do targeted campaigns and things like that. And I practice my graphic design skills. I think your prior host, Ron Wood, I think was his name, he mentioned using Fiverr. I used Fiverr for that project, just an online marketplace of skills. I outsourced to this company called Elance, which is now Upwork, to do some graphic design work, some database work. And this was all for a small town running club to have a Thanksgiving morning 5K. But the skills that I was able to practice with, and that wasn't really the intention of it, but it came out that way, that they were totally applicable to this bigger venture, you know, that I did with the job fair. So that's what I try to mention to people. Don't dismiss something you do for your town library or your church or your kids' sports team or whatever. If you take on something like that, those skills could be applicable, whether it's public speaking, whether it's software, you know, work, you know, working on a website. Like, I'd never really messed around with having a website at all, and now I think I'm half decent at WordPress. Not that it's that hard of a web builder, but and PayPal. Like, I used to hate PayPal as a mid trying to buy stuff, you know, but now as a business, PayPal's wonderful. At least I think so. But so you're totally right. Some of these things that you can do on the side can really help you in future endeavors.
Absolutely. Now, how many people attend your conferences?
It's kind of a swag. The DC one, normally about 75 nukes. And then by being the nature of everybody being spread out all over the globe, there'll be another, I'd say, 30 or 40 resumes that get sent in by people that can't attend. And then there's myself and my board. I had my friend board that I called my beginner board. And now I've graduated to like a legitimate board of people. They're all ex-Navy nukes, but they're not anybody like that I was on a boat with or classmates. So I try to get three or four board members, so there's other people other than myself there walking around and playing devil's advocate with the candidates or introducing the candidates to a certain company. Now, most of the companies send a ex-Navy nuke to represent them, possibly in addition to an HR person. And so grand total, the DC one, which is normally our biggest one, we'll have 100. 50-ish people in the room, so it's not a huge endeavor. What I do, and this is something I just came up with, I try to figure out how many candidates are going to be able to come based on time of year, based on location, whatever. I take that number and I divide it by three, and that's how many tables, like company and business school tables or just school tables that I end up having. And that gives a nice ratio. Now, I turn down companies because, I mean, Navy nukes are popular, and I try to pick and choose because I don't want too many companies of one industry vice another. We try to diversify the types of companies are there. So, and some people, they don't like how I do that. They'd say, you know, just get all the, you know, whoever wants to come, let them come. Well, I'm like, well, I kind of want these guys to look at all their options, to talk to a national laboratory, like Los Alamos National Laboratory. They've been one of my best companies because people don't consider going and working for a national laboratory, but then they get out to Los Alamos with a low cost of living and amazing weather, and they're like, I could do this, you know, and Starbucks, or, you know, what's a Navy nuke going to do with Starbucks? Well, Starbucks CFO is a Navy nuke. He's an ex-submariner. And then the Seattle one, it was just the first one last year, and it went over really well. So I might have more companies there next year. So that one's a little smaller. The Hawaii one's tough because companies have a hard time getting permission to go to Hawaii, even though it's the biggest submarine base. Currently, there's more submarines in Hawaii than anywhere else, but it's just something about the, you know, asking your boss permission to go to Hawaii that they have a hard time doing. So, but we make it work. We, you know, I mean, seriously, I think that's really what it is. And, but for any company people that are looking for a great talent, not just for my conference, there's all these military out there in Hawaii that never talk to businesses or graduate schools or recruiters or anything because they're so far away. Companies never go out there, so it's a really bad place to transition from. And you know what I mean, like you and I would have thought about that when we're picking our duty stations. DC, great place to transition from. Get a Boston ROTC position. That's like a wonderful, you know, short tour to leave the Navy from. But Hawaii, it's tough. Enjoy that sunshine because it's harder to transition from there. So
yeah, grab a surfboard, become like a surf instructor.
Yeah, seriously.
Wouldn't be too bad. How do you go about marketing the events? So right now you're actually out in Seattle, and I think you've got a live meetup in, is it Bremerton tomorrow?
This one's on the Kitsap Peninsula out there. This one's actually in Poolsbow, it's a town near the submarine base. But so just something else I came up with on my own. Once a year, I'll go to every submarine home port and host what I call a meetup. And it'll just be at a bar or restaurant. I'll have appetizers and drinks, and I pick up the tab for everything. And I just encourage people to come out. And not that I'm the world expert on transitioning from the military, but I think right now I have a Navy nuke down pretty well as far as what, you know, the 95% of the things that they can do. And I know what I think they can do is more than they think they can do. So we'll just sit there and talk. And, it's like a little kind of a wardroom function almost in a way. And I'm in a popular, like Seattle, I know I'm going to get a couple of ex-Navy nukes that live in Seattle. They're going to come up as well and help me out, stop into the young guys and gals. And just so that's a way that these people come and meet me and see, hey, this seems like genuinely a good opportunity for me to come to one of these career fairs and learn about my post-Navy options. Because, I guess most of your listeners would probably have a military background, but for those that don't, the most officers get out after their initial obligation. If I'd have to put my, best guess on what it is in the submarine community, probably 70 to 75% will get out after their initial junior officer tour or their shore tour. So you have a large swath of these people that are going to leave. So it's not like we're pushing and prodding them to leave the Navy. They're leaving. And I think we all need help when we're getting out because you've been babysat for upwards of 10 years and you don't really know what's all out there. And so that's another reason for the meetups. I do other advertising, social media advertising, LinkedIn advertising, but I really think these meetups are the most effective.
How do you get people to attend the meetups? Like, how do you find them? Because you don't live in Seattle, right? So, I mean, like, how do you, what were the steps that you took to create and promote this meetup for this week?
Well, based on my last job there, I'll still have contact. And I'll just ask people to spread the word. Some of the candidates that came to the job fair in November, I said, hey, I'm going to be back up here if you want to tell some of your friends or spread it around the base. I, with it just being myself, I can't have 50 people show. They're more than welcome to all show up, but I can't do all 50 of those candidates due diligence. Now it sounds like we're gonna have 3 or 4, other guys like myself that are 5 or 10 years post Navy. So if 30 or 40 folks show up tomorrow night. I think we could, you know, over 3 hours, talk to a lot of them and answer their questions. And because a lot of them are the same questions. Like there's some of the trendy business. My probably trendiest business that I'm connected to right now is Blue Origin, Jeff Bezos' space company. They've come to our last couple job fairs. There's a Navy nuke that's real high in that company that he would like more Navy nukes to come and work for Blue Origin. And it seems like every meetup I have, everybody's asking about Blue Origin or other space jobs. And so it's kind of funny that that's the, you know, submarines to space. That's kind of one of our more interesting career options right now. So,
how do you go about connecting with the companies that come to your career conferences, like the one you just mentioned? I mean, do you reach out to these folks on LinkedIn, or are they already kind of in your network? Maybe somebody in your network's connected. So how do you go about, I guess, doing that networking and connecting with these companies or these former nuke officers, I guess, at these companies that you would ultimately want to attend your career conference?
Honestly, well, it's all different. I'll say a good percent of them just contact me. Like this Blue Origin guy just emailed me out of the blue and said, and honestly, I never heard of Blue Origin, you know, 2 years ago. And I guess that was kind of common because, you know, they were keeping it under the radar a little bit. Now you can't go a week and not read about them in the New York Times. So he reached out to me. He was ex-Navy nuke. Apple, probably 3 months ago, they just reached out to me because there's some nukes just kicking butt at Apple. The one of the, I forget what year graduate he is, but he's in charge of one of the main parts of the Apple Watch, and he's just killing it at Apple. So the you know, higher ups in Apple see, like, hey, how can we find more guys like him? But early on, when I was still trying to, you know, get some credibility with the companies, I would approach them if I knew they had a history with this demographic. Like both Wharton Business School and McKinsey, the consulting firm, they love Navy nukes. I mean, you should see our class, 2001 from the Naval Academy, how many submariners went to Wharton. I think it's like 12 or 15 or maybe not 15, but like 10 or 12. And this is of like, 100 people. And then how many worked for McKinsey? It's almost like a pipeline, submarines to Wharton to McKinsey. And so I almost kind of called them on. I'm like, you guys love this demographic. I'm going to have a job fair with just this demographic. Would you be interested in coming? And yeah, sure, definitely. Wharton, my most loyal business school that comes. Harvard's been there. You know, there's been a couple other ones, but Wharton's the one that just keeps coming back for more Navy nukes. So,
now, is this the only career conference for nuclear power officers?
Yes. Yeah. We're probably not too dissimilar from a service career. Academy Career Conference as far as the diversity of the companies, but I basically have to have some of the standard Navy nuke career options there, that if there was an aviation conference or whatever, you wouldn't have those. I need a civilian nuclear power company. They get a really bad rap as far as, like, you know, environmental folks, but as far as a transitioning officer, they pay well, and it's a pretty family-friendly schedule. They do shifts, but you average like 35 hours a week or something like that, and you get paid pretty darn well. So if there's a power plant near where home is, or in an area you'd like to live, it's really not a bad option. And just some of the other ones that we've talked about, consulting or business schools. So I kind of tweak it in that regard. Now there's headhunter job fairs all over the place for Navy nukes, like some of the ones that you've probably run across. But this, with the headhunter job fairs, the companies have to pay a commission, and the commission for a transitioning junior officer or junior nuke officer is probably like 25 or 30 grand, you know, because it's probably 25 or 30% of base pay or 25% of all compensation. So it's a pretty penny. So a lot of these companies like Apple or Google, they'll never pay a headhunter for a Navy nuke, but they will come to a job fair. Because the cost is pretty low. So that's kind of our business model then.
Yeah. So you really have a niche, and I mean, since you're the only career conference that's focused on nuclear power officers, I mean, I think that's awesome. I'm just kind of sitting here laughing. I'm like, well, how do you market this thing? Like, how do you get companies to and universities to want to attend? And you're like, oh, they just reach out to me. Like Apple just reached out to me kind of randomly. And I'm laughing about that. I mean, it's not funny, but I'm laughing because like, that's what happens when you have like such a tight niche and you're the only one in this market. And like what's going off in my head is like, man, like if I'm a Navy SEAL, like there could be like a Navy SEAL career conference. It could be like an Army Ranger career. I mean, you could like franchise this. And so maybe that's an idea we'll just throw out to the community. Like if anybody wants to kind of get into this business, you know, to contact you and you guys can form it. But I mean, it's... I mean, it's working. It's working. And I think a lot of the reason is it's such a super tight niche. And when most people start businesses, they start very general, you know, very broad. And it's very difficult to grow a business when you're kind of, your business is for everyone. But, you know, your business is only for this specific type of person. And you're creating value for that specific type of person. Number one, it's kind of a past version of yourself, right? You have experience in that field, and you're using this strength as an event planner, you know, kind of like this talent that you have to really capitalize on that and bring super value to the marketplace. So I think that's really exciting.
No, it's fun. And, I don't know. It's like one of those things where people thank you, even though like they're paying you and, like the candidates don't pay much, and I should get your two cents on this, Scott. Like, we make them pay, well, the board and I's decision to make them pay a $30, we call it a resume processing fee. Some people think we should just let them come for free. And I've always gone back and forth, and some people have said, you should have what you're providing them, you should make them pay $100. You know, the candidates, that's not what drives any of the profit margin, you know. So I picked 30, pretty much I just copied up the Service Academy Career Conference. They charged $30. I felt like that was a good number, you know. It's just to take the conference seriously and what's $30? It's like, you know, three beers in New York City, you know. So, so that's kind of what we do as far as that. And then, it's a lot of fun. And yes, if somebody wanted to do an aviation job fair or SEALs, their name in industry is pretty strong right now. Now, a very small community, because I mean, I think there was 15 of our classmates that ended up going SEAL. So there's 100 submariners and probably 300 SWOs. So it's a pretty small community, but yeah, you could totally do something like that.
Absolutely. So let's shift gears a little bit and maybe kind of talk a little bit more generally here. But so what were the most important skills that you learned at the Naval Academy and as a submarine officer in the Navy that has helped you as an entrepreneur?
Let's start Naval Academy. Naval Academy, I was a total sweat when I went into the Naval Academy. I worried about everything, and I was not a risk taker. And you pretty much have to, you know, put yourself out there periodically at the Academy, and especially as a senior, you had to assume leadership roles and be in front of people. And So I think that helped, as far as the nuclear community, that I never worked that hard in my life. Like, I was an electrical engineering major at the Naval Academy, and I remember they gave us the study skills course the last semester of our senior year before we were going to go head to the nuclear power school. And I was like, I'm about to graduate with a degree in electrical engineering from the Naval Academy. Do you really think I need a study skills course? And then you get into the nuclear pipeline and you're like, oh, I get it. At power school, I was studying every night till, 9 o'clock at night and getting up and going in at 6 a.m. And then, at various times when you're getting your warfare pin, you just have to study hard and go without a lot of sleep. Like when you're deployed, standing watch in the engine room and trying to qualify up forward as an officer of the deck, you're just amazed what you can do on such little sleep and just the intensity of. And I was only on a boomer. I mean, I can imagine these fast attack guys that are still on station for a while. But no, it really taught me a lot about myself, the limits I can push with myself. Which was funny because a couple years later, my wife and I had twins, and twin newborns was nothing after the submarine community. It was like, sleep, this is nothing. I got more sleep, with twin newborns than I did being deployed as a junior officer. I think that's, and that's probably every person in the military, whether they're a Marine deployed to the Gulf or I'm sure you could send a, there's a reason SWOs drink a lot of coffee, you guys hit it hard too. So I think that was probably some of the main skills for me that I can take from the Navy. Other than the obvious things like personal conditioning, I think that's a really big thing for your life, exercise, blowing off stress, public speaking skills. You're forced to speak in front of people as an officer. The one thing, and maybe you could tell me, Scott, as far as your community goes, did you have to get up and do a lot of training as an officer on a surface vessel?
No. What do you mean? What kind of training do you mean? Like physical training?
Or no, like engineering training or wardroom training or, that's something that in the submarine community, you go in and you're an officer. Maybe you're the officer that's in charge of all the steam piping in the engine room, the machinery in the engine room. Well, then when it comes time for engineering training, you might get tabbed to give 2-hour training on a steam line rupture in the engine room. And so you're this new JO on board, and you have to go through the reactor plant manuals and put together a 2-hour training. And you're training your bosses that know more about the stuff than you do, and it's a lot of public speaking skills. And that's another thing that the submarine community really taught you, whiteboard skills and public speaking skills that I'm sure another thing that really lends itself to some of the consulting communities. There's a reason retention's not real high in the submarine community. They beat the crap out of us. But it's all for the good though. So
it's a tough life. Yeah, we didn't. We had a lot of training, obviously, as a surface warfare officer, mental training, and on the job training. But I thought you were talking about like, did you get up and do like 100 pull-ups every morning and push-ups?
No. Neither.
There was a couple of treadmills in the Hilo hangar, on the. The flight deck, but that was about it. So it was really up to you. How about success habits? Is there anything that you do, daily rituals, things you do on a daily basis, things you do when you wake up in the morning that contribute to your success and keep you going?
I already mentioned working out. I think that's a pretty obvious one. I think lots of us do that. Something that your listeners might find interesting is I write periodically for a electronic magazine, specifically on baseball. It's a electronic magazine based out of Pittsburgh, and I might loop in other sports or maybe talk about the Pittsburgh Marathon. But so on a regular basis, I do some writing, and I think that's that's helped me. And this will be the, I think this is also like the fourth or fifth year that I've done this. And I mean, it probably, I'll have an article every 2 weeks or so, but it normally requires some research. Like the baseball stuff that I write on is a lot of the sabermetrics and the business models of baseball. It's pretty nerdy, but it helps me construe arguments and discussion points and put together some research and present it in a way that I don't do just in normal business emails. And it kind of keeps that side of my brain fresh. And I've had a couple stories that have got picked up nationally in some of the sabermetric communities. And and it's something I might mess around with more. I get enjoyment out of it, so it's more of a hobby than it is a job. And so that's something, the writing. I don't know. Do you do much writing in your work, Scott?
Well, I write blog posts and that sort of thing to, you know, when we publish these interviews. And I have actually had a blog for 4 or 5 years, and it was actually a really good habit to develop, you know, that habit of mm-hmm. writing, you know, waking up every morning and spending, you know, 15 or 20 minutes writing something. You know, I don't think that writing is, for me, is my unique ability or my unique strength. You know, I can do it, you know, I've done a lot of it, but I think that process of, you know, taking the thoughts that are in your mind and, you know, that physical activity of writing down your thoughts, whether it's just your goals or ideas, really helps you clarify things. So as a success habit, I would think that writing is a great success habit. You know, keeping a journal, even if you don't share your writing with anybody. But I think also there is really something to sharing your writing, your thoughts with others, whether they're in the form of like a podcast, you know, where we're not really writing here, but or a blog post or the articles that you write, because that takes a little bit of courage, right? That takes some courage to put your ideas and thoughts out there. And then you get feedback on those ideas and people kind of, you know, vote those ideas up or vote those ideas down. So, and I think that that's helpful too. So anyways, just that's my two cents.
Yeah. And it's something that's longer than 140 Twitter characters or a Facebook post, you know? So, I think it does help, but, okay. I'm trying to think of other success habits that, I think we all have. I like to cook a lot. I think that's something that lends itself to creativity. I don't follow recipes. I just kind of I use what my mother was a home ec teacher, so I learned to cook at a pretty young age, just because she didn't have any girls, and so when she needed help in the kitchen, it was my brother and I. And I think that's another creative process that if you could practice cooking and. Because instead of coming up with an article, you're coming up with a meal. And my wife works for the American Diabetes Association, so we both work out. So trying to cook healthy is harder than just trying to cook delicious. And so that's something that I like to do. It's also relaxing. Someone told me one time that the more you are aware of your senses, your five senses, the more your body is relaxed. So when you are cooking, you are smelling, you're touching, you're tasting, you're seeing, and you're also listening if the stuff is crackling in the saute pan or whatever. So it's one of the few things that you touch on all five senses. And so when I said that cooking relaxes me, this person, I forget who it was, they said, yeah, this is why. And I'm like, okay, that makes a lot of sense. But so that's, I don't know if that's a success habit, and it might even not be the most efficient use of time. You know, getting a McDouble from McDonald's is probably the most efficient way to consume calories. But I think it also just helps me be more creative then.
Absolutely. So you mentioned some resources that you are using, Upwork being one of them, Fiverr, WordPress. Are there any other tools or services, websites that you use that you found helpful?
I love MailChimp. I'm a giant MailChimp disciple. I've gathered a lot of email addresses over the years, and it's a really great, they call their service a freemium service, up to 2000, I believe, or I should say 2001 minus one email addresses. It's a free service, and then after that, you have to start paying a fee each month, but it's a really great way to maintain an email database and to do different. I mean, I just use the basics. There's all kinds of like A/B campaigns, and you can work e-commerce in there. And but no, that's been good for me. I love this little free program called Turbo Collage. I use it all the time, not just with the job fair stuff, but also for the writing. It's a really easy way to throw a couple JPEGs together and make one JPEG or PNG or whatever. So, because with having your own business, you have to do some, either do or outsource some graphic design work periodically. And I try to do a lot of mine, just so I keep getting better. And Turbo Collage is a nice little program I use. I'm an Apple guy, so there's this cheaper app called Pixelmator. That's my version of Photoshop that I use that I like. I'm trying to think other. I try to listen to a couple podcasts periodically. I'm a big Freakonomics junkie, and as well as other ones, either baseball ones or business ones. And there's an app called Downcast I like for organizing my podcasts. It's a pretty, I think it's only like a 99 cents or $1.99 app that I use to do my podcast listening.
It's called Downcast.
Downcast. A lot of things I discovered via website called Lifehacker. I don't know if you're familiar with Lifehacker, Scott, but that's something else I've. Lifehacker seems to be a lot of people like you and I, a lot of young professionals that are trying to discover new things, and it has a lot of good life habits too in there. That's mentioned in Lifehacker, and Lifehacker recommended Downcast.
I think we read the same article. Somebody emailed me a few weeks ago, and it was a Naval Academy grad. And she's like, "Oh, you know, hey, I want to listen to your podcast. I've got an Android. You know, what app should I use, or how do I listen to it?" And I'm like, "Don't you just listen to it? I mean, I've got an iPhone." So I found that. So I just Google searched it real quick, and you know, I sent her an article from Lifehacker, and Downcast was one of the recommendations. So, and there was like four or five other ones, but. I think we read the same article, but anyways.
But I'm telling you that our demographic, while you and I are different, we're probably pretty similar, you know. So those are the things I use most days. I'm not a smartwatch guy yet. I'm just an iPhone person, and I haven't doubled down on any of that type of technology yet, but talk about a great time to have your own business. What is out there, the weapons that you have, it really is just an amazing time to be a small business owner. So that's what I even encourage to these nukes transitioning. I said, if you're able to do it, you know, if you have a spouse that can support you, or you have the time, consider something entrepreneurial, you know, because and especially with veterans, there's all kinds of veterans groups. And I'm trying to meet up with this Bunker Laboratories up here in Seattle. It's a veteran-based startup incubator. And it's a great time to be trying to start something on your own as far as weapons.
Now, what's your best advice for somebody wanting to start a business? you know, maybe they're just getting out of the military, or maybe they've been out for 5 or 10 years, and like, man, I've always wanted to start a business, you know. And what one piece of advice would you give to that person?
Let's think. I'm trying to get advice that other people haven't given. I try to figure out how you can find the pools of capital to make it work. I'll go back to where I live. I live in Pennsylvania, in the middle of a small, I'm in a small town in Western Pennsylvania, not close to Pittsburgh or Philadelphia, and not too close to Penn State or Harrisburg. So I'm kind of out in the middle of nowhere in Pennsylvania. Nice small town, great place to raise a family. But there's not these large pots of money where I live. There's not defense contractors or tourism. We don't live near the beach. And so when I was trying to figure out, and I went this route with the job fair thing because I thought it would work, but another part of it was I was not trying to find money where I was living, because I didn't think I could. Like the job fairs wouldn't work with the company. So, or if I would have went on another route for a small business, I don't think it could have worked where I live, because there's not the type of incomes or the businesses to make it work. So if you're starting up a small business, think about where you're going to find your customers and or where the money is, I guess you could think about it. And especially in this digital age, they might not have to be right where you're living. My companies are all over the United States, and now I got one that's in Scotland now, so I guess all over the world technically. And I live in this little 3,000-person town in the middle of nowhere, Pennsylvania, but I kind of was able to find customers because of this business model. So you consider, when you're starting with your business model, try to figure out where you're going to get your customers from, how many you need, how much they need to pay you or whatever to make this thing work, and maybe work your way backwards from there. Maybe start off with the customers and then come up with a business model. That's happened before. You have these different companies or different demographics, and you're like, well, what can we sell to them or what can we do for them? And then work your way backwards to your business. So my business is very niche, and it's kind of what I came up with, what I could get my heart into. But if you're game for all these different types of businesses, maybe try to work your ways backwards from the sources of income.
Well, you've done a great job. So when's your next conference? Where is it? 4th,
August 4th. I'd say Washington, D.C., but the people that actually live in D.C. would correct me and say it's in Arlington, Virginia. Our D.C. job fair, I keep saying our D.C. job fair, it's really in Arlington, Virginia, on the other side of the river from D.C., right by Reagan Airport. And that one, we actually do a business day. It's from 9 in the morning till 3 in the afternoon. And then the night before, there'll be a networking event at a bar/restaurant that we'll kind of meet and greet and do some ice breaking there the night before. But if there's anybody that listens that's a Navy nuke, and it's not just for transitioning Navy nukes, this is for retiring people, this is for people in the middle of a civilian career that just want to go and network. I would love more senior Navy nukes to come and mentor at these things, so it's not just the board and I that giving you our opinion. So it's really all comers. If you went through the nuclear pipeline and served on a seagoing vessel, you're welcome to show up. And it's at I have them at big restaurants or interesting venues because of the fact that the business model made more sense for me. So we rent out one of Jose Andreas's restaurants in D.C., the one that's near Reagan Airport. And so the food's actually really good, and there's breakfast and lunch for this one. And no, but they're nice events, and if you know of anybody that would like to come, August 4th, and the website is newpoc.com, N-U-P-O-C-C.com. And just go on there and all the information. The company's currently attending. I think we're almost full on companies. I can probably take one or two more companies. And but I think we have a nice mix of companies there this time. So,
sure. And do you have a website where people can learn more about you?
My personal website is m3snetworking.com. So Mike3SierraNetworking.com. And stands for Mike's Three Sons. That's my LLC. And it'll link you back to the job fairs. It'll have a little, I've done some consulting on the side, and then also a little bit of the baseball writing stuff. But yeah, and if any of the aspiring entrepreneurs or any of your listeners ever want to reach out to me, either jump on one of those sites or get in touch with Scott, and I'd be glad to help out any veterans that have any questions.
Great. And I'll post a link to your LinkedIn profile in the show notes if that's okay with you.
No, that's fine. Yeah, that's fine. LinkedIn's great. Great resource.
Cool. Well, this has been exciting, and I've really learned a lot, and hopefully our listeners have learned a lot as well. And I can't wait to share this with everyone. And thanks again, Mike, for joining me today.
No, thanks, Scott. And thanks for this service you're providing everybody. I think it's great.
What's up, everybody? Hope you enjoyed that interview with Michael. And I just wanted to talk for a moment about the Service Academy Business Mastermind and what it's all about. And, you know, the Service Academy Business Mastermind is a community that I'm building that connects Service Academy graduates who are building businesses. And we had a great meeting last week. It was an online meeting. There were 10 of us on the call, everything from a mobile app developer to a real estate developer, to a grad who's building a public speaking business. We had a real estate investor. We had a grad on there who's got a company where he's creating a new type of technology for batteries. So it was a really diverse group, and you know, different types of businesses. And you know, there was a huge value exchange on the call. You know, lots of networking that took place. We were giving feedback on each other's ideas, helping each other out. And that's kind of the gist of it, you know, is to provide a networking meeting each month to the members with different people in the meetings each month. So we mix it up. It's kind of like speed dating, and it's really cool. And we also have a private Slack channel where the entire community can connect. Right now, we've got about 30 members in the group, and we're getting about one new applicant per day. So, you know, roughly 30 a month. So just imagine the power of a network and or a community where you've got, you know, maybe hundreds of academy grads who are building businesses, connecting with each other, helping each other out, giving feedback, pitching ideas. You know, it could be a really powerful group. So if you'd like to check it out, again, our website, www.sabmgroup.com.